Jonathan just finished up a great sermon series. I love it. I love it for several reasons. The story of Job is fascinating and important to me. I also love it that he preached on it so I don't have to. It was an extremely hard series of asking God that honest question, why are you doing this to me? And Job basically resolves with this answer, and that answer is true, and it's powerful and it's important. It is that God is almighty. He has all wisdom. He has all love. He has all grace. He is all holy. And we don't stand on a place where we can question him. We are weak. We are ignorant. We are selfish. And we don't have a place to question him. And that's true. And that's important. But can we just be honest here, just with us in the room? That's not enough. It doesn't answer the cry of our heart, does it? Our heart still cries out, God, I don't think you know me. You don't know what it's like to suffer like this. You don't know how I feel. So yes, I don't have any reason to think I have a right to ask you this question. I don't have a right to ask you this question, but do you get me? How can I trust you when it feels like everything is shifting underneath my feet? And no matter what I do, it's not good enough. How can I trust you? And the beautiful story of the Bible is that Job actually, if we're speaking chronologically, was probably the first book written, not the last. And there's a progress to Revelation. And ultimately, we find that God sends his own son into the world in human flesh to lay a hand on us both. Jesus himself empathizes with us. The wonderful message of John's gospel is that Jesus is that someone. Unlike other gospels, John doesn't really develop this idea. He doesn't kind of leave it up to you to figure out that Jesus is special and important and in fact the very Son of God. John comes out with it the very first word. Literally, he says the first word. He says, in the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. And everything that was God was the Word. And this Word was there creating all things. And this Word became flesh and he dwelt among us. And his name was Jesus. And he was full of grace and truth. And that's the beautiful thing about John's gospel. He just fully starts with us, and he says, God, Jesus is God here on earth with us. And his book is divided into three parts. And the first part is all about just kind of introduction. It's about beginnings, right? Jesus starting his ministry, calling us to be born again, saying you're not going to understand it if you're not born again, and just doing all these signs of healing and introducing us to his message of living water and forgiveness and offering us healing. And then he goes on to the second section. And that first section we covered last year. It's in a series called God's First and Final Word. I've recently found out that a lot of people don't know this, so it sounds a little bit like a commercial, but all of our sermons are on the website. And you can go there and look them up by topic, and that topic is for God's first and final word. That's the name of that series. You can also look them up by scripture. You can also look them up by date. It's really a fun website if you have nothing else to do this afternoon. So, but we talked about that last year. This year we're going to talk about this middle section, the second part of John. And the way John divides his book up, he refers to the same thing three times. First, in chapter 2, he talks about Jesus going to Jerusalem, and he tells us why Jesus went to Jerusalem. He said it was the Passover. And that's a heavy, pregnant term in Israel's culture, right? The Passover, the celebration of God delivering Israel out of Egypt at the cost of their firstborn son. God spared Israel because they sacrificed a lamb and brought them out of slavery and out of bondage. That's why we sang that song this morning, out of my bondage I come. Now John is bringing us to the second part of Jesus' ministry, and he again reminds us, it's the Passover. It's a year later. It's the Passover. And in this section, he's pointing to something else about the Passover. The Passover is fascinating because in it, God brings Israel out of bondage, but he does not immediately take them to the promised land, does he? They have to dwell in the wilderness. They end up living in the wilderness for 40 years. And during that 40 years, they had to learn that God would provide for them. Specifically, God provided four things. He provided bread from heaven. He provided light in the darkness. He provided water out of a stone for them to drink. And he provided protection. And John takes us through this middle section of his book, what we call the I Am statements. And the I Am statements are important. And again, another connection, because it was during this time, during the Exodus, that God revealed himself by giving Israel his name. And his name is I Am. And God, and Jesus here is revealing himself to us, saying, and this is fascinating. We're going to hit this over and over again, but I want you to hear it. In Exodus, God is the great I Am who gives you bread from heaven. But here we're seeing Jesus is the bread from heaven. I am the bread. I am the light. I am the good shepherd. And the very first thing he says to us, actually the first of the I Am statements, though it's never listed that way, he says, I am, don't fear. I am. Don't be afraid. And I love that, and that message, as I've meditated on it for the last couple of weeks, has just resonated deeply, because it was a wretched month. I'll just be honest. It was a bad month. For a lot of us, it was a bad month. And things were kind of falling apart, and it made you wonder if there was any purpose or any hope. And it was just a sad, depressing month. And it's okay. I'm not calling on you to counsel me about it. It's all right to be sad. I give you permission to be sad, and I need for you to give me permission to be sad from time to time. And so it was a sad month. And it was a scary month. And I needed to know that while I'm in this wilderness called life, between being born again, between baptism and the grave, our life is this sojourn in the wilderness. And while I'm here, Jesus is with me and he is enough. And I don't have to be afraid. So let's read this great text where he introduces that idea to us. Please stand for the reading of God's words from John chapter 6. It is a very picturesque text. If you are able to do this kind of thing, it's a great text just to close your eyes and listen to, and let God draw pictures of it in your mind. I don't have an imagination, so that never works for me. So I can't pay attention if I'm not looking at the words. But you do you. Hear the word of the Lord from John chapter 6, verse 1. After this, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias, and a large crowd was following him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat down with his disciples. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was at hand. Lifting up his eyes then, and seeing that a large crowd was coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat?" He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii would not buy enough food for each one of them to get a little. But one of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "Well, there's a boy here with 5 barley leaves and 2 fish. But what are they for so many?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." Now there was much grass in the place, so the men sat down, about 5,000 in number. And Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated. So also the fish, as much as they wanted. And when they had eaten their fill, he told his disciples, "Gather up the leftover fragments, that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten. And when the people saw the sign that he had done, they said, "This is indeed the prophet who was to come into the world." Perceiving then that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, Jesus withdrew to the mountain by himself. When evening came, his disciples went down into the sea, to the sea and got into a boat. And they started across the sea to Capernaum. It was now dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them. The sea became rough because a strong wind was blowing. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on the sea and coming near the boat, and they were frightened. But he said to them, "It is I. Do not be afraid." Then they were glad to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. Thus far, the reading of God's Word. Please be seated. All men are like grass, and all of our glory is like the flowers of the field. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but not God's Word. God's Word stands forever. Let's give our attention to it. It is I. Literally, I am. I am. Don't be afraid. What was God's answer to Job? I am. I am. Don't be afraid. Ricky, I know you don't know what's going on and why and how it's going to end, but I am. Don't be afraid. River Oaks, some of you feel like heartbreak after heartbreak is hitting you in the nose week after week. And you're just scared. But I am. Don't be afraid. We need that message today. It is a message that is every bit as relevant to us as it was to the disciples who saw Jesus the first time. And the first thing I want to point out to you is it's true. Life without Jesus is scary. Life is scary. It's a scary thing. It's scary because it's just so big and there's so little that we know. You could even say this. Years ago when we first invaded Iraq, Donald Rumsfeld was giving a press conference. And he said, "Well, there's things that we know and there's things that we don't know. And of the things that we don't know, there are things that we know we don't know. And there are things that we don't know that we don't know." And everybody laughed then. It became a meme. It would have become a meme if memes were a thing then. But you know what? As I've thought about that over and over, from time to time over the last, however many years that's been, 16 years, it is true. And it's the things that you don't know that you don't know that bite you, right? So let's think about these people following Jesus. What did they know? They knew that Jesus was over here by the sea. And so they wanted to go to him. That's what they knew. What should they have known? They should have known they were going to need food. Well, you know, they can pick up food along the way. If you're carrying everything that you have with you, it gets a little heavy after a while. And so you don't want to carry anything you don't need. So, well, we'll get there, and when it's time to eat, maybe he'll have food for us. Rabbis fed their people from time to time. Or we'll just go into a nearby village. But what they didn't know that they didn't know bit them, right? They didn't know how far out he was going to be. And they certainly didn't know there was going to be 5,000 other people there. They didn't know that there would not nearly be enough food for that many people. And something as simple as just feeding themselves, they weren't able to do it because of their ignorance. Things that we don't know that we don't know. Does that ever discourage you about all the things you just don't know? That's me. I got kids picking out college. It's weird, right? Picking out college is a big deal. Those of you who have been, you know. There's things you know, right? You know what course of study their school offers. You know how expensive it is. You know how academically rigorous it is. Those are the things you know. But what do you not know? You don't know that there's a very good chance they're going to meet their spouse during those 4 years. You're going to interview every girl or every boy who's going into that school to see if they're worthy. They're going to meet their best friends. They're going to become like their friends. They're either going to feel involved with and loved by a campus ministry, or they're going to feel rejected by it and run the opposite way. All those life-changing decisions that are going to be made during those 4 years are based on things that you can't possibly know. Doesn't that make you feel good? You don't know it. Now, because I've mentioned it, you know that you don't know it, but that doesn't help. Life is scary because of the things we know we don't know and the things we don't know that we don't know. And speaking of things they didn't know that they didn't know, the disciples, when they got into that boat, didn't know they were about to hit a storm. We can assume that Jesus said, go to the other side. We're going to the other side. I guess maybe they thought he had gotten in a boat with other people so he could minister to them on the way. They were just following the plan. And they get in the boat. And Matthew tells us they got in the boat in the evening, which would mean between 6 and 9 o'clock, probably earlier. And it was during the fourth watch of the night that Jesus came to them, which meant they had been rowing in a storm for 9 hours. I'm just not strong enough for that. And the point is very clear. They were not going to make it. They were not in a huge ship, right? They were not in a luxury cruise vessel where they just went down below deck and got out of the rain. They were in the rain and the waves and the wind for hours alone and scared. Probably actually not scared. They're sailors. They had been there before. But they were not going to make it. And they didn't know that storm was coming. And sometimes you just don't know what's going to happen. Sometimes things pop up out of seemingly nowhere. Sometimes you just go to the doctor thinking everything is fine, and he tells you that you were wrong. Sometimes a pregnancy that everything has been right with for every day up until now all of a sudden turns. Sometimes you're... child comes home from school and he's gotten in trouble in a way that you never saw coming. Two of my closest, longest-term friends from other cities are ministers who have sought to do everything right, who've sought to live their entire life following after Christ. Two of my friends like that have sons in jail today. They just didn't see it coming. They just didn't see it coming. And life is scary without Jesus. But it gets better. Because Jesus is also scary. And that's fascinating to me. Isn't it great? They're in the middle of the storm. They might be about to drown at any moment, but they don't seem to be too worried about that. We're not told that they're afraid of it. And then they look out and they see Jesus walking across the water, and they were terrified. And I like that, actually. I think that's pretty accurate. That tells me that this is probably a true story. That's what you would say, right? Even if you were desperate on the waters and you saw somebody walking on the water, you would not be happy to see them. Like maybe we've already died? That would be a possibility. Maybe this is a ghost? But surely that's not the man we left on dry ground. Surely this person is not walking across water like it's dry ground. And they are terrified of him. And here Jesus is revealing himself to be the Lord. He is making yet another reference to the Exodus when God rescued Israel by bringing them across the sea on dry ground. It's this water salvation. He is coming to them, and they're scared. And I want to let that sit on you for a second. I want to let you sit with that. Or sit on you, whichever. Have you ever been scared of Jesus? Has God ever scared you? The way God scares me is when he shows that he actually is real. When God shows you that he's actually listening to you it's kind of frightening. Now, I've shared some of those times with you before. One time when I was in seminary, and I think it was one of the probably 10 times in my life I've actually prayed. I was angry, and things were falling apart, and we were broke, and my family was broke, and I started praying for a family member, and I said, Lord, I know you're with me, and I know you love me, and I know you've given me Jesus, and I know all that stuff, but my father-in-law needs a job, and we need money to pay these bills. And I kind of ended the prayer thinking, I'm not sure I was supposed to pray that way. 3 days later, a check shows up in the mail from a church that I'd forgotten that I'd asked for money from. Two days after that, my father-in-law lets us know he's been working all week. He'd gotten a job. And I was so scared. I wasn't even happy. I was just scared that God was real, that God was listening. If you've never really experienced that, then, you know, you have to ask yourself the question, do you believe God's real? If you believe he's real, he can do anything at any time to anyone, and he's actually listening to you, it's a frightening thought. And it becomes this overwhelmingly true thought. It kind of dominates every other part of life. A lot of people have talked about this, but it's true. If God is real, then we worship him. If he's not real, then we're wasting our time. But the thing that he is not, the thing that Jesus can never be, is unimportant. I love the way Flannery O'Connor says it through the book, A Good Man is Hard to Find. This is the voice of the convict who is a villain. And he says, Jesus was the only one that ever raised the dead. And he shouldn't have done it. He pushed everything off balance. If he did what he said, then there is nothing for you but to throw away everything and follow him. And if he didn't, then it's nothing for you but to enjoy a few minutes, the few minutes you got left, the best way you can. That's true. Did this happen? If it didn't happen, then it's not an inspiring story that should make you feel good. It's a false promise, and you're wasting your time being here. If it did happen, it should frighten you a little bit. And there's nothing for you but to throw everything away and follow him. Those are the two options. Jesus is scary. It's scary to throw everything away and follow him. It is scary to put all your eggs in that basket that if grace isn't true, we have no hope. That if the resurrection is not true, we have no hope. It's scary, but that's the decision we have to make. Life without Jesus is scary, and Jesus himself is scary, but Jesus speaks to us these great words. Literally, he says, I am, fear not. Fear not. Why? I am. Now, let's just talk about the construction for a little bit. It's weird. It's a very awkward construction. You would never say the phrase, I am, even in a sentence in Greek. You don't really in English either. I mean, we say I'm, right? But like, how often in a normal conversation do I ever say, I am Ricky? Like, even if you answer the phone, somebody says, "Is back in those days when we used to answer the phone, is Ricky there? I would never say, I am Ricky, you know? Or if I'm, you know, just in normal conversation, not writing something out for a teacher. If I'm going to the store, I'll just say, I'm going to the store or going. You know, what are you doing? Going to the store? You don't say, I am going to the store. It's awkward. It's even more awkward in other languages. If you've studied, like, Spanish, you just use the first person singular pronoun, the first person singular verb, right? You just stick that in there. You don't have to say, I am going. You just say going, and the I is assumed. That's the way it is in Greek all the time. If you're using the first person verb, if the I is assumed. And Jesus, throughout this passage, John is very careful to make clear for the next six chapters, I am, I am, I am. And he's always been doing that. You're supposed to hear this echo, that if you if you haven't studied the Old Testament, I'll tell you, explain this to you. The echo is this. When God appeared to Moses, Moses was afraid to go to Pharaoh and tell him to let Israel's people go, Israel go. He was also afraid of the Israelites that they wouldn't follow him. And so he said to God, who should I say sent me? And God said, tell them I am sent you. And in doing that, God gave Moses his holy name, which is I am. What does it mean? It means he's the eternal present. He always is. There is no was. There is no change. There is no completion. There is no will be. The eternal I am. I am everything I ever need to be. I am everything that I ever will be. I am. And Jesus looks at his disciples in their fear and he says, fear not, I am. He looks to the people on who are following him on this mountain, and such a beautiful picture. In six chapters, we'll hear him say, I am the good shepherd, in five chapters. But here he says it. He acts it out first. What does he do? He sees the people following him. He knows they're hungry. And he makes them to lie down. He makes them sit down on the green grass. And he provides them something to eat. He gives them something to pasture. I am. I see your needs that you don't see. I know all those things that you don't know. And I'm going to provide for you. And he takes a poor boy the barley loaves. Barley's a terrible thing to make bread out of. It won't hold together. It's mealy. It's the food of the poor. And he takes the food of the poor and he hands it out and he breaks it and he breaks it and he breaks it and he keeps multiplying it as he breaks it and he keeps distributing it and multiplying it as he's breaking it. And by breaking it and multiplying it, he feeds everyone. He sees what they see. He knows what they know. He's entered into their poverty. He knows what they don't know and he provides for them. His disciples start out across the sea, but he's still on the mountain, invisibly, silently invisible to them, praying for them. And he sees that they need him, and he walks to them, and he speaks words of assurance. Don't be afraid. And when he gets into the boat, when they receive him, the storm ends, and they are at their destination. And some of us, we sit here and we say, well, that's great for them. Yay for them. But my storm hasn't stopped. And I don't want him invisibly praying for me in heaven. I want him here and now. And how do I know that he's going to bring me to my destination? And we're called to listen to what he said. I am. Because of who I am. Because I am God with you. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. He is the only true God. He is the God who spoke to Moses and Abraham and Isaac. And he is the God who is speaking to us. And he is with us. He is with us. So what does that mean? First and foremost, it means this. God came to them in the storm. He didn't wait for them to call out to him. He wasn't mad at them for leaving him. He came to them in the storm. And that's the entirety of the New Testament message, right? God has come to us. It's the entirety of the Old Testament message. It's the entirety of the Bible. God coming to us, not waiting for us to get it right, not even waiting for us to ask. Coming to us. Experiencing our misery, but more than that, coming to us to rescue us. And sometimes we want to ask, well, why does it always have to be a storm, God? Why can't you come to us on a nice day? And I've been thinking about that a lot this week, and I think maybe most likely, knowing as much as I do of the Bible, there's many who know a lot more, I think basically what my answer to that is, he does come to you on nice days, you're just not looking for him. You don't need him when everything's fine. And so you don't see him as clearly as you do when he is set against the darkness. And he comes to us in the storm, and he sends the storm for a reason. I believe he sends these storms primarily to teach us to seek shelter. When I was a kid, I built a doghouse for one of my dogs. I had a dog every year because I lived on a highway and we didn't have a fence. So that's okay. You city people don't understand. But one of them, I really liked her. Her name was Princess, and I built her a doghouse. And I was worried, though, because she never got in the doghouse. And I went to Mom. I was like, Mom, she needs to know to get into the doghouse. And my mom was like, why? She goes, well, I said, well, if it's ever raining, she needs to get in there and stay dry. And Mom said, I think she'll find it if it's raining. But I didn't believe her, so I went outside and got the water hose. And I started spraying the dog until she got the doghouse. I was just being gracious like God, right? Why does he send the storms? To show you where the shelter is. To show you where to run to for safety. I think that's why he does oftentimes. But this is what we also know. The message is that Jesus himself underwent a storm for us that we're never going to have to undergo. He stood in God's wrath. He stood under God's righteous justice, anger for us. He bore the brunt of all of that for us to be our shelter so we would never have to undergo it. And he volunteered for that. And God the Father sent him for that. And sacrificed his own son out of love for us. And so that means one thing, absolutely, I'm absolutely sure of this. No matter how bad the storm is that you're going through, I know absolutely it is not because God doesn't love you. It can't be that. He sent his son to die for you, so it can't be that he doesn't love you. Maybe it's because he's trying to teach you who God is. Maybe it has something not even to do with you. Maybe it's something for your children or for people who are far off. I don't know. But I know what it's not. It is not God teaching you that he doesn't love you. It can't be that. And because we know that he volunteered for us to go through a worse storm than we're ever going to have to go through, that's why we come to him. That's why we run to him for shelter. That's why, even though he's more scary than the storms, we bring him into the boat. Please pray with me.